And now we are exploring the science behind smiling here on the Ideas Network. Hope that brought you a smile. Thanks for joining us. I'm Keely Boltina. When people smile, the brain sends a signal that releases feel-good neurotransmitters like dopamine and endorphins and serotonin. And we assume smiles are friendly, but people in some countries think American smiles are inauthentic and manipulative. We're talking with a Wisconsin scientist who's explored smile culture across the world for decades, and we want to hear from you. Do you smile at strangers in public? Are you someone that uses the fake smile to try to get through the day? Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is Paula Niedenthal, a UW-Madison psychology professor. She's the founder of the Niedenthal Emotions Lab at UW-Madison. Paula, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you so much for your interest.
Psychologists have been paying attention to smiles carefully, but mostly from the outside. What is your UW-Madison lab learning about the smile?
We've been studying questions about smiles all the way from sort of the biology and physiology of smiling to cultural influences on smiling. So we sort of look at all sorts of levels. One of the reasons that smiles are so interesting scientifically is because although in kind of folklore or everyday knowledge, we think of smiles as reflecting the fact that somebody is happy on the inside of their body, and that if they aren't feeling happy on the inside of their body, what they're doing with their face that looks like a smile is fake. So we usually think about things as being true and fake or true and false. The world of smiles, when you sit down and think about it, even if you're not a scientist, is much more complicated than that. We smile during different states and to signal different things. So our faces are both evolutionarily and evolutionary and biological adaptations, and they're also social adjustments and adaptations and cultural products. And so we're using expressions on our face to signal what we want people to do, what we're thinking, and what we're likely to do. That's a pretty tall order for a face, but that's what we use it for. And so our lab tries to explore the different types of smiles we have and what they signal to other people, and indeed what the underlying state in the body is for the individual who's making that smile.
So smiles aren't simply the like clear expression of an internal feeling. And, you know, we've identified real smiles and fake smiles, but you're saying there are three other types of smiles that are more specific there. What have you identified?
Right. What we do is take a social functional approach to facial expression. And what that means is asking why are faces doing that in that context and that culture. And we essentially looked through the whole scientific and other literature on smiles and said, you know what, there are smiles occurring under sort of formal and important situations in which somebody's trying to solve a particular basic social task, like a task that we have to accomplish to live successfully in the world. And obviously, some people don't live that successfully in the world. And some of that can be related to smiling or how smiles come about. Looking carefully at the world of smiles and thinking about how they are functional or serve to solve social tasks, we identified a problem, which is to reward other people and ourselves, because as you mentioned earlier, when we smile under certain conditions, we feel really good. What you can think about in terms of a task there is that we are trying to reward people and we're trying to reward ourselves. How can we do that non-verbally? A smile works really well. A smile makes us feel good about what we just did, and we're likely to repeat it. That's what happens when you get rewarded. And if we do something or somebody else does something to us that we really like and we smile at them, they're also likely to repeat that. So in terms of the previous, classification of false smiles and true smiles, this is like the true smile. This is what we think of as a true smile. We feel good or we're making somebody feel good. And what we're doing here is saying that's because we're trying to increase the probability of that behavior. But we see two other kinds of smiles that we don't call false and that seem to solve really important tasks of living. One of them we call a dominant smile. This could be also referred to as a smirk or a smug smile. This is certainly not coming from feelings of happiness. But if we wanted to use positive words, we could say pleasure in superiority. So we're usually signaling that another person has done something silly or stupid or less good than us, and that we're dominant in that situation or in that context towards them. So this does not in any way have to be associated with feelings of positivity or happiness by the smiler. And it certainly doesn't elicit positivity or happiness in the perceiver. And then finally, a smile that's probably the most frequent that one sees in the world is what we might informally call a polite smile and even possibly a fake smile. But they're very automatic and they're very functional. And so we tend to say this is a true smile of affiliation. This is a smile that we make with our lips closed at somebody as they enter an elevator, with, or somebody that we vaguely know when we pass them on the street. And what it means is I'm safe and open. I'm safe and non-threatening in this context. So you really want to do that in an elevator, right? Because you're getting into this tiny space. And so we call that a smile of affiliation, and that signals non-threat. That's also, once again, different from feeling happy. And you're not trying to make the other person feel happy. You're trying to make them feel safe in the context. So smiles of reward, smiles of dominance, and smiles of affiliation appear to exist. We've sort of modeled how the face looks with all sorts of research, and it many countries identify these smiles as having meaning and as being social signals, and so we call them true smiles. Mm-hmm.
Paula Niedenthal leads smile research at UW-Madison. She's a psychology professor who created an on-campus emotions lab to study smile science. What questions do you have? Join us at 800-642-1234. We continue this conversation here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina. We're talking about smile culture and why smiles are considered contagious, what they do to our bodies, what they mean. Our guest studies emotions. Paula Niedenthal is a UW-Madison psychology professor. And we were just talking a little bit about culture and how smiles translate across cultures. And we have a caller on the line who'd like to talk about this. Daniel from Madison, welcome to The Morning Show.
Thank you.
What are you wondering?
Yeah, I hear this a lot. People say American smiles are fake, and there seems to be some truth to it. You see people, especially in the store, and they smile at you. Few seconds after you look back into their faces, it's not the same. So you can tell right away that it was just to pass through the day or just the moment, or some kind of smiles are just forced on, like the customer service personnel in the store or in the offices, whether they are being forced or they've been asked to smile fakely. So they smile at you a few seconds, you look back into their face, and it's not the same anymore.
Daniel, thank you for pointing that out. Just the experience of how people's smiles might even change in the same conversation. And that really, Paula, does play into this question of social situations and how smiles differ among cultures.
Yes, I lived in France for 14 years, and I certainly heard that commentary many times. There are many comments that I've heard across the world about the possibility that this is related to capitalism and sales or manipulation. I've heard people from other cultures laugh and say, wow, if they think that that's manipulation, I mean, we smile in our culture fakely all the time. I've also heard people talking across areas of the same country. I once talked to somebody on the island of Java in Indonesia and asked about smiles on Bali, and that person said, oh, they all smile fakely there because they just want tourists to come. So this is certainly a discussion across culture, and it's in fact one of the reasons that I study smiles. It's not my impression that one country has more fake smiles than the other at all. It's just what we do have across cultures is the context in which we smile, the frequency in which we smile, and our actual need to communicate with smiles at all. So in arguing about whether a smile is false, it requires that somebody has a particular cultural lens through which they see facial expression. And if an expression doesn't occur when or as long or continuously as in their culture, they very often say that the facial expression is inauthentic. So my take on this is that there are cultural rules that lead us to accuse each other of having false smiles rather than understanding that smiles are used differently across cultures. Now, the idea that people are being forced to smile, for example, by management, that's certainly happening now in other countries. There's been smile campaigns in Russia preceding the World Cup soccer. There were smile campaigns in Paris in order to increase expressions of warmth. In these cases, and certainly there are businesses in the United States that might tell people to smile. In all of these cases, it turns out that fake smiling, if that's what it is actually more effective than scowling at people in making the interaction go smooth, at least in many countries. So first of all, the utility of a fake smile turns out in experiments to be better or higher than a true scowl or a true look of disdain. So the real question is, what are the alternatives? What are the motives? What's the culture that you're in? I remember teaching, right when I had moved from France to the United States, I taught a class on smiles, and I told my students, who were largely from the United States, what the questioner just said. And the people who worked in service jobs said, oh, wow, I'm just trying to make the people feel good. Or I chose the job because I actually like it. So I think that this is a very complex question. And I think it leads to lots of cross-cultural concerns and miscommunications. And this is one of the reasons that I study smiles and culture, because I think it's a really critical and interesting problem.
We're talking about the science behind the smile with guest UW-Madison psychology professor Paula Niedenthal. And as part of the importance of the smile, we should talk about the fact that as people have been encouraged to wear masks throughout the pandemic, we have lost the ability to necessarily see a lot of the smile. You can see some of it in the eyes, but the mask covers so much of where the smile really happens. What have you found in the times where we've been asking people to cover up their smiles?
Yes, we've done research on the effects of masking smiles and other facial expressions on the perception of those expressions. And as you might guess, first of all, the crinkling of the muscles around the eye, which causes crow's feet, is involved in some smiling for some people. And it's important differentially across culture. So it's a kind of inconsistent and complex signal. But we certainly have the belief that when you smile with your eyes, you convey more positivity, at least. So given how complicated the crow's feet are, it's not a perfect signal. What is being lost is the whole bottom of the face. And the smiles that I mentioned earlier, dominance, reward, and affiliation smiles, they look somewhat different. More importantly, they have different dynamics. That is, that the way they move is different. So you do lose all of that. You lose somewhat of ability to detect the signal, the actual meaning, like I'm telling you I'm not threatening, or I'm telling you I'm superior to you. And those are really different messages. So that's a little bit problematic. I have talked with numerous people who say, particularly in service situations or all sort of, you know, social exchange situations, that they sometimes just crinkle their eyes on purpose, even if in order to ramp up the fact that they're smiling underneath the mask, which I think is a really great and pretty fast adaptation.
Mm-hmm. If masks go away more, could we be overcompensating with our smile habits?
Do you mean because we're doing what I just described with our eyes? I guess I don't fully understand.
Yeah, when we take off the mask and we realize we haven't seen people's smiles, are we going to smile too much?
Oh, interesting. I suspect that we are going to go back to not smiling. I suspect that what we know, I mean, not smiling, I go back to more natural right, or baseline smiling. I suspect that once we have the full range of cues about whether the other person understands what we're doing with our face, then we don't have to increase the signal anymore. So my guess is no, that we're not going to fundamentally change.
Excellent. So that mirroring and that feedback will perhaps go back to normal. We've got Mike from Milwaukee who called and couldn't stay with us. Mike says we use emojis to communicate our smiles through technology. So do we need more emojis to express our different smiles?
We have millions of them, and we actually do have all of those to some degree. But, you know, as we see, just like with language and also with facial expressions across cultures, like there has to be convergent agreement or norms adopted for how the emoji matches what we're trying to communicate. So, you know, designers don't necessarily look at my research of the emojis. And so they're probably approximating what they know to be true in the world. And so what they know to be true in the world will turn out to have affiliation and dominance and reward smiles. But people probably, you know, will need some work on converging on what those mean. So we probably don't need more. We need more agreement.
Mm, so that kind of, as we talked about, smiling in real life across cultures, doing that in the digital realm.
Right.
Hmm. Paula, this has been fascinating. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us about smiling.
Absolutely. I really appreciate your interest, and it was a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. Paula Niedenthal is a UW-Madison psychology professor. She is the founder of the Niedenthal Emotions Lab at UW-Madison. And we've been talking about smiles. You can continue the conversation if you like. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings if you'd like to share your smile or talk more about what smiling means to you or different situations where you've had questions or interesting interactions with people. And you find yourself smiling. Maybe it's, you know, while you're streaming things and you smile back at the TV and you find yourself doing that. Not that I would have experienced that. Ahead on the morning show, thanks for staying with us. We welcome former Senator Russ Feingold and scholar Peter Prindeville. We're talking about their new book. It's about the potential for a constitutional convention and how they see the extreme right trying to redefine America. Your calls are welcome at 800-642-1234. Join us for that conversation next. I'm Keeley Boltina, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.